And we are live.
Cool. Yeah, this sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. We're in Drew's dining room, and for the Delaware Ohio podcast.
Yep. On Horse Parade Day, one of the most quintessentially Delaware things you can do.
I've got a bunch of notes, but we got to warm up because, I don't know, it's kind of weird to sit in a dining room, and we've got the recording equipment on, and theoretically we're talking to all of Delaware.
Yeah.
So
this is the first podcast I've ever done that'll actually go anywhere. So
yeah. So let's hope it goes somewhere. And I've got a bunch of notes. I sent them to Drew last night. Some of them are administrative, and one of them was, well, I meant to do an intro, DELAWARE. Okay, Drew, you can't get any more corny than that. So, you know, no nerves.
All right. So where do you want to start?
I want to start with why I came to you after band practice and said, hey, Drew, I want to start a podcast. Besides the fact that I had a few beers at that point, but I want to start a podcast. And I have a question for you, actually.
Sure.
Did I say I want to interview you as a guest on the podcast, or did I say I want you to be the co-host? Because I don't remember, and I'm okay with either one. So.
I don't remember either, but I'm okay with either one, too.
Okay.
I'm up for either one.
And that brings up the next question. You are the reason I asked you is because you're the city councilman for Ward 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple days ago, I saw a sign out front of my neighbor's house for somebody else for Ward 4.
Yes.
And I said, well, I'm not going to say his name on the podcast. And now I actually forget. I think it was Ryder.
Yeah, there's two.
And then I pull up to your house, and there's a sign for somebody else for Ward 4.
Yep. Yeah, there's two guys running, but I'm not running again. So.
Okay. So that answers that question. I actually didn't know if you were running again. So you're now, I don't know if they call that a sitting duck city councilman. Is that the term? I don't know if that's the term.
Easy target. But no, I'm, yeah, lame duck, I guess. But
lame duck, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and we kind of, they've, the way that they set up the elections, they try to eliminate lame ducks. That's usually after the election till the next person takes office. But a while back, some people were doing some weird things during that time period, so they eliminated that time period. So as soon as election day is over, I'm done, and the new person will come in immediately at the next meeting. So,
oh, okay.
So there is no...
That makes sense.
...area where I can screw things up without any mandate from the citizenry or anything like that. So.
Delaware. Delaware does things that make sense, I think, and hit mark.
Yeah, they try to.
Yeah. No, they really do. And I mean, that's one of my bullet points too, but let's let this roll. So you have, who's the name out front of your house?
Chandler White.
Chandler White. And I assume you know him and are picking him, not picking him, but as your successor. And
yeah, I met with both candidates and I liked what both of them had to say, but I thought Chandler's approach to kind of housing, he's coming from he's a younger guy, so he's just entering the housing market with Delaware and seeing all of the insanity that is the current growth for Central Ohio. And so he has some thoughts on that and ways to kind of move Delaware forward with through that. So I liked what he had to say and chose to endorse him.
Okay. All right. One of the things that, okay, you asked me earlier, actually, before I said, I refused to speak to you before we were recording.
Yeah.
And you asked me if I'm from Delaware. Yes, I'm from Delaware. I grew up on Stratford Road.
Oh, okay.
And we fought development there. I mean, my mom mostly fought development there for a long time. And I know that actually city council wouldn't have been involved there because I think it's still not in the city, actually. It's one of those islands now that's not in the city.
Yeah, there's certain areas that are and certain parts that aren't, I think.
But development is a big part of city council's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my questions for you was actually, what, in your opinion now, after how many terms did you?
Just one. So this is my fourth year.
Okay. 1 4-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In your opinion, what is the, I guess my question was, say, top three most important functions of city council?
So I think it's, the biggest one I think is going to be protecting health and safety. So that's, I think it goes beyond fire, EMS, police, that kind of stuff, but goes into, okay, so the buildings that are built in the town Are they going to be safe to live in? Are they going to be inspected? Once they're built, can we count on them to stay functional? All those sorts of things. So pretty much everything the city does to one degree or another is about health and safety. Even the parks department, that kind of thing. So I think that's the most important thing, and the budget is what city council manages for that.
Wastewater.
Yes.
That has to be a big part of it.
Yeah. And yeah, if you ever get a chance to go on a tour of the wastewater plant, it is fascinating.
Let me write that down. Oh, I do have a pen. Tour of wastewater plant on the podcast somehow. Yeah, actually, that is interesting. That does interest me. I owned an apartment building for a little while, and it just shocked me how big of a deal that is. You look at a building, you don't see any water. Well, that's the whole point of the building, is to manage that, really. Yeah. I mean, I don't see the whole point. It's a big part of the budget.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's similar with the city.
Yeah, and to the point where we've kind of spun off drinking water and wastewater, and they're their own, they call them enterprise funds, so they have to be self-funding. So when you pay your water bill, that's the only thing it goes for, is maintaining the existing facilities, providing for any expansion, maintenance, that kind of stuff. So whenever you see they dug up Pennsylvania Avenue, I think last year, and replaced all the water lines on there. They did our street, Lincoln, a couple years before that. So they're kind of constantly trying to fight time underground.
What's the oldest, you may not know, what's the oldest sewer line we have in Delaware? Sometimes it's shocking how old those things are.
Yeah, I think some of the ones in the downtown area, I think, date back to 1860s. So, like, they've pulled out some valves that are, they've got a little, like, the number on them, and it's late 1800s. So,
wow.
They've lasted a long time, but
I suppose they're made out of cast iron, I think, in the 1860s.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Not stainless steel.
No. And I know that
not copper. That wouldn't have been copper. That wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah, and I think there's probably lead in some of them, but they have a part of how they treat the water.
Got to edit that out.
Yeah. Well,
it's wastewater. Yeah. Wastewater.
Yeah. And it's got the way they treat the drinking water has certain things in it that bind the lead to the pipe so that it doesn't leach into the water, but which is where Flint went wrong, because they stopped doing that.
Yeah, I did hear that it was not a new, it wasn't new pipes, it was something new they did or something. Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, wastewater is a huge part, but for council itself, we're, the way that we're set up as a city, we have a manager council's form of government. So council is the legislative arm of the city. So we approve budgets, we can do approve development, legislation, all those sorts of things, but we have to do it with in conjunction with a professional city staff. So we have people, because I mean, I'm a history teacher / technology nerd for a school district, and as much as I want to think I know a lot about how a city works, there's people who know a lot more than I do. So so our goal is to hopefully work with them to create a budget that makes sense, fund it, but then let them run the day-to-day operations, because they're the experts. Like, we have somebody who knows all the laws about wastewater, and he's awesome, knows what needs to be done to keep things up and maintained, and that takes the pressure off of random citizens to be like, I don't know what chemicals to buy to make the water safe to drink. So
that's not something I want to, well, a lot of people outside the city have septic systems, and it is something to deal with, that's for sure.
Yeah, but so we're all part-time, but so to get back to your question, the three things, I think the budget's probably the big one that we do, because that's the yearly, here's all the income tax money and other funding sources that come to the city, and then aligning them to the different needs that each department has, because there's always more need than there is money to go around, because that's just how the world works. But
I'll try to summarize that. So health and safety.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe aligning budget could be number two, because that's, or allocating budget.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was city finance, but I suppose finance advises city council, and then city council helps make the decision.
Yeah,
based on,
they'll put together the budget, and so right now we're going through what's called the CIP process, which is capital improvement plan. So it's the 5-year outlook of, okay, what does every department need for large scale purchases? Do we need a new garbage truck, that kind of stuff? Or I think a new fire truck just came online last week that was budgeted 3 or 4 years ago.
That's a big.
Yeah, they're like close to $1 million.
Right.
For one truck.
How many do we have? I know we have the one on Liberty, and then there's the other one out where Pittsburgh Drive leaves. yeah, London Road.
We have 5 fire stations now. One
the city does. You
yeah.
Said. Okay.
One is not up and running yet, and that'll actually be the main fire station. It's the old American Freight offices out on the east side. We're going to renovate those. But truck-wise, I think the main station has...
Well, you don't need to know all that.
That's true.
I don't want to put you on the spot to know all the...
Because I'll get it wrong.
Count the fire station. We can have a fire chief. He should know that.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have... I think there's 2 ladder trucks, and then each station has at least 1 smaller, like, pumper truck that they run for that station. But
so health and safety. But yes. Then you said 5-year outlook, bigger projects, and that brings up, for me... There is a riverfront project.
Yes.
On the horizon. I know they've talked about it. I think I've seen plans for it, some kind of preliminary plans. And I imagine it's, you know, when you see the budget and then you know that it's going to be doubled or tripled in reality. And, you know, you don't want to sink the city on the river when the first money goes toward making sure the river doesn't smell like poop.
Right.
And so it doesn't. What's the status of that riverfront project?
So right now it's just a preliminary plan. So the city contracted with a consultant firm to say, okay, so we have this riverfront that has really never been, at least in recent history, an active place where people can go recreationally. Way back in history, it was the industrial zone for the city because riverfronts is where mills were started. What can we do to make it a more active destination for people? And they gave us this super nice plan that involved like closing the Winter Street Bridge and pedestrianizing it and all these cool ideas.
I've seen a lot of cities where the riverfront is good and it's amazing. I mean, it really transforms the city, and I don't say a lot, but the two I can think of is San Antonio. It centers around the river. Columbus went from a marshland that happened to be there it's the center of, not the center, but it's the, you know, it's really the highlight of being in downtown Columbus. Mm-hmm. Cosi is on one side, looks beautiful on the other side when you see it from downtown. Supreme Court's right there on the river. Those are 2 huge cities, though. Those are top 20 population cities. But that's not to say Delaware can't have it. And I think Delaware, if a smaller city is going to make it happen, I think Delaware could.
Mm-hmm. I think you can look at like maybe a Dublin. Which, I mean, Dublin has way more money and investment than we'll...
Oh, they put that bridge across.
Yeah, they've got that huge river. Huge project that they've done, and that's way more than we can ever do as a city and should do, I think. But Gahanna had their Creekside project, which is similar, where they've kind of... A lot of the ones, at least locally, have tried to attract development to the riverfront. Ours is a mix of that with kind of ongoing revitalization of the east side. So like the chair factory, which has been, I think it was a storage unit for a long time, but it was also vacant for, I think, at least the last 10 years.
What was it?
The old chair factory.
Oh, okay. Where's that?
I
don't know where that is.
So if you're at Mingo Park, like at the pool, and then you look across the river, it's right on the edge there.
Oh, I have been there. Because I lived over on the east side for 2 years, and I biked back there I took a walk back there just to see what was back there, and I didn't know what it was. I saw abandoned buildings.
Yeah.
But they're on the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and way, way back in time, it was a factory that made, like, Delaware had like a bespoke chair that they made that was sold all over. So for a long time, that's what it was. But now it's been
History
abandoned.
Of Delaware podcast. Yeah. That my wife even said she'd like to see a History of Delaware podcast. So we'll have to have a historian on and tell us about that.
There's some very cool things. Like, I won't digress on that right now, but, so there's some private investment going on. The old train depot on the east side is another one. It's actually the same company doing the chair factory and the train depot, but they're pumping a lot of money into redeveloping those as either restaurants or offices or apartments, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that's one aspect of it. And I think probably the aspect that'll happen quicker. The other side of it is the public investment side, which there is no budget for right now. So, but the idea would be to, along the riverfront, create as much as parkland, amphitheater, places where people can congregate and enjoy time. Because the river it's a beautiful river. We just forget it's there sometimes.
So Dave, our drummer, wants to start a parking app that consolidates all parking, public and private, and makes it easier to find a parking spot. And the ultimate goal would be a feed into, like, if you want to imagine what it would be a feed into Google Maps that, instead of navigating to a place that's difficult to park, you would navigate to the parking spot, and then you would know how to walk there. And it looks like a total digression, but when we asked into it, city was clearly trying to focus on the east side, including using a lot of the parking on the east side. Mm-hmm. And I have parked on the east side a couple times because it's a surprisingly short walk from like East Winter Street across the river to downtown. It's not far.
Yeah.
And the other thing over on the east side, the Chair Factory, I think you'd have to go around. I think you have to go all the way, to Lake Street, I think.
Yes.
To get there.
There'd
be some kind of a bypass.
Yeah, there's a small street. So if you cross Central over the river, there's, I think, Milo will go up to it. But eventually, one of the ideas of this riverfront
off
project
of Central?
Is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you said that, yeah.
But there's a proposed pedestrian bridge that would go from Mingo to that Chair Factory property on the east side, so people could just cross from Mingo straight over.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So, which is huge because, I mean, it's almost insulting how close Mingo is to the east side, but you have to walk all the way over to Central,
right,
and then down either down the bike path or drive all the way over to Lincoln to get to it, when we could just cross the river.
Yeah, I think I was at Mingo, and I saw the houses up, because they're up on a hill, mm-hmm, on the other side of the river. It goes straight up to those houses.
Yeah.
And I said, where are those houses?
Yeah, they're
over there. That's right by the Chair Factory. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's Lake Street is right there, but it's,
you've given it a name now. Now I know it's the Chair Factory.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's another thing, a project on the east side. I don't know if it's city. I just skimmed the city council agenda for tomorrow, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so today is the 10th of September, by the way, if this is listened to next week, next month, next year, if we do several of these and they say, oh, well, what did they talk about on the first one? This is the 10th of September, 2023, and city council meeting tomorrow. They're going to talk about rezoning. Do you know about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's the old train station that used to serve the city. It was the main train station.
Near where those big silos are, right?
Right across Central from that. So that's the old, it's not really Victorian, but Second Empire. I don't know my architecture, but
okay.
Train station, it's right across from the food truck depot, kind
right.
of all in that same
mm-hmm.
block.
Yeah.
So that was purchased by a company a couple years ago, and they've been looking at redeveloping it, turning it into, I think they're hoping, restaurant space. Up until this point, it's been just entirely renovation based. But the nerdy part of me is going to be like, this is interesting. I don't know if everyone will find it interesting. But because the railroad owned it and it was so old, it doesn't exist as a zoned property. So they have to create a zoning for it that matches the surrounding area. And then, if needed, change that zoning to match the new intended use. So
wait, it has to be changed. It can't just be changed initially into whatever it should be?
So it's kind of. So, like, so we have general zoning that has been around for, this is getting way deep into some of the
council stuff.
No, that's
good. I didn't mean to cut you off before.
No, you're fine.
I didn't want to put you down on a rabbit hole that, you know.
Yeah.
By accident.
I'm a history teacher.
We'll work on this.
I go on the deep dives when no
go
one
ahead,
wants me
go
to.
Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll let you go. Yeah.
So our zoning code is kind of antiquated. It's been around for a long time. It goes back to, like, not the 60s, but a long time ago, where you wanted industrial would be one area, business would be one area, residential would be separate. So it's the whole urban sprawl idea of zoning. Recent changes to that have kind of gone back to the more the traditional way cities grew, where you could have commercial and residential close to each other because people want to be able to walk to where they shop and that kind of thing, which is why I think both of us live in the neighborhood we do. And
right.
To some degree, everything's close
by.
It's
a huge advantage. Yeah. I biked over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I try to walk to anything that's within a mile because I can.
Right.
So when we zone something, a lot of times if it's zoned as a business district, there's certain limitations within that zoning law that we don't really want to be anymore. So they do something called an overlay to that business that would allow it to do certain things that wouldn't normally be allowed in the law. So that, like, for example, if you wanted to build a building, have retail on the bottom and residential on top, you can use this overlay process to do that without...
Is it a type of variance?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's kind of a formalized way to do that. So we can, because we don't have the money and
like
manpower.
A bulk variance, that kind of...
Yeah. Yeah. So for a certain parcel of property.
Specific for, you know, like a...
Yeah. Like you want to
driveway
build your,
or something.
Yeah. You want your driveway.
You're talking about the whole areas.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? It'd be multiple properties?
It can be. It can be for just a general section of land. So it's called plan mixed use overlay is the name of it. But
This applies to the train station?
Yes.
Okay.
So that lets them then do things with that property that are more up to date than our zoning code would otherwise allow.
I see what you're saying. So it's not zoned now at all. It mm-hmm. is. It just is a train
right.
station. It's there.
Yeah.
And they would have to zone it in accordance with
our
the zoning code, which maybe should be amended, but that might be another rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But the better route to do in this case, since it's one thing, is to zone it per the code and then go through the process of amending that to more modern. And that's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah.
It's antiquated.
Yeah. And you'll see that with a lot of the newer developments that come into town where they'll zone it as business or residential or commercial and then do a overlay to it to allow different uses within that area that might not otherwise be allowed.
Gotcha. So, okay. All right.
So nerdy, but it's people see it every day and they question why it's happening, and that's
why I asked you to do this, because you know about these things and as a city councilman. So I asked about the riverfront. You and back to the original top three things that city
yes.
council does. Would you put that in the top three?
The riverfront project itself, or
no, just in general zoning? Because that's the number one thing that I thought of that city council does is like zoning.
Yeah. So I'd say development is probably one of the bigger things that comes on the agenda week to week.
And it's a permanent thing, so I think everybody agrees, and people disagree on it sometimes. So everybody mm-hmm. agrees that we need to take care of the sewage. But the zoning gets contentious sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's the number one disagreement in a city, but it might be.
Yeah.
And so it's the one that gets more attention, I think, with city council, that you see the developers go in there, they have plans, and those plans a lot of times are made to make money
mm-hmm.
instead of necessarily what the people of the town would actually want. They don't, you know, the developers don't make money on parks. The people
right.
like parks, though. So...
Yeah.
Would you put it in the top three, I guess?
I would.
Okay. All
yeah.
Right.
And especially because we're a growing area, I think it's going to remain one of the bigger things council handles on a regular basis. Like, I grew up in Toledo. There weren't typically huge development cases because it was Toledo and it was a losing population quickly when I was growing up. So,
yeah.
So people didn't want to build in Toledo at the time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've been to Cleveland, Toledo. Cincinnati doesn't have that effect so much, but Cleveland feels like a city of a million with 300,000 people in it.
Yeah.
I'm sure Toledo's similar.
Yeah. Smaller, it's mini Detroit kind of
Akron,
feel to
Canton.
It.
And then Columbus feels like a city of 300,000 with a million people in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's full.
And yeah. Well, it's interesting to look at.
Delaware's good in between.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marion used to have a lot more people. Delaware's probably bigger than Marion now.
Yeah. We're
maybe a lot bigger.
We're up on, I think, if we're not the second biggest city in Central Ohio after Columbus, we are right on the edge of the other competitors, which would be like Newark, Dublin, places like that. So we're close.
Is Dublin? See, that's what I like about Delaware too. Is Dublin is a separate city from Columbus, but it's part of Columbus, really.
Right.
I mean, it's inside 270, and Delaware is its own city. We have our own university,
mm-hmm.
And we exist without being a suburb of Columbus, I think.
Yeah, that's and then when we talk about a lot of those development cases, that's a lot of people's concern is, are we losing that small town feel? And my argument would be, I don't think we are yet. I was in Marysville yesterday and driving through, and it's like they have hotels and a Home Depot and all of these like big box store things, which Delaware doesn't have. And I think that contribute, because we're close enough to Columbus that you can get there easily, but we don't have to build them within the city. we kind of maintain that old feel that we have where the downtown is the downtown. It's not like a Dublin where they're creating a downtown now, but before you'd have to go out
there. They're landlocked and creating a downtown. Yeah,
right.
It's not easy. It takes a lot of money, which Dublin has.
Right.
And that's why we're talking about them, but there's a lot of cities that are not succeeding at that like Dublin is.
Right. And, but I don't know, 20 years ago, if you wanted to go to where life was in Dublin, you'd go to like Tuttle or a place like that. So,
right.
And Delaware's never had that. So I think we've maintained that small town look to things where we have a core that you can go to and it's active and well used and all those things.
Yeah. It helps to have, it doesn't bother me too much that there's a lot of people moving in around because it brings the life to the core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people come in from the outside. You have a parking problem. I mean, you have a parking problem, but in some ways that's a good thing because that's people coming to the businesses.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah. There's always a balance, but it's when there's life, there's going to be people rubbing elbows in good and bad ways.
Right. Right. Yep. I think Delaware does a good job with it. So health and safety, development. Do we have a third?
Probably, I would honestly say the committee work. Each kind of area the city is responsible for has a committee that helps to run that. So they're kind of like the first step in a lot of processes where we have, so let's say you wanted to build a development in the city, you'd submit your plans to the planning department. Then we have a planning commission, which is made up of members of council, I think a member of council, and then I think six just people who volunteered to do that from the community. And so they're the first kind of step in that process where if they think it's a good idea, they can't find any legal way to object to it, they can say, yes, we think this is a development that's good for the city, and then it goes to council. So it's kind of where a lot of that initial work gets done. And it's one of a lot of the people who do that, they're kind of the unsung people that really...
Volunteers, civic volunteers.
Yeah, okay. And they just have an interest in it. So we have a Historic Preservation Commission, which is I'm on right now, and there's the people who are on that, just they really like preserving the history that our town has. And
are you on that commission as a city councilman, or is that something besides?
No, it's as city council person. So okay. Each commission has at least one council rep. We have a few that are more administrative. So like we have a parking and safety committee too that I'm on, where we discuss basically road safety, parking issues. And that's three council people and then the fire chief, police chief, city engineer, those people who understand how do we move traffic? How do we keep people safe? That kind of thing.
Right.
So that's more, we don't have citizens on that commission, but it's still where a lot of those decisions get made. It's like if someone wanted a crosswalk in a certain place, we discuss the pros and cons of putting it there. Is it going to be a safe crossing? All those things. So this is where all the nerdy stuff happens, but it's also...
Traffic engineer gets into that. What do they call it? Just the city engineer who also does... I think city engineer also does traffic, right? I think it's not a separate...
Yeah, they do... Engineer. So our director of public works is his official title, but he does garbage pickup, recycling... road construction, traffic, all of those different...
Civil engineer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So any of those bits and pieces he's overseeing, which is the airport, because we have an airport. So there's a lot of... The city's been stuck with a few things historically that we didn't necessarily want, but we're trying to make viable. So the cemetery is another one that we are in charge of because of a way that a law was written in like the 1840s. And now we have a cemetery and we have to make it financially stable and viable to continue. So,
right. Which cemetery is city owned?
The one on Sandusky Street, South Sandusky.
On the whatever side of the road that is.
Yeah. On the right north.
On the way down to Walmart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's as of 5 or 6 years. No, it's been longer than that. Within the last 10 years, it's become a city-owned property.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to maybe sound dumb. I think I thought that was St. Mary's Cemetery.
Theirs is right next to it, and then they have a second one next to it.
Which one's bigger?
The city-owned one.
Okay, so is it way bigger? Because I wouldn't even know. I just know there's a cemetery there. I guess I didn't realize there were two.
Yeah, I'd say it's, and I'm just ballparking. I think St. Mary's is probably a third, and then two-thirds of that section is
somewhat comparable. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we have a top three. Yeah. I think we're warmed up.
Yeah.
How far in are we? We're 30 minutes. We just hit the 30-minute mark.
We've had one question.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So they were questions I was interested in, and I'm glad we went down those. Let me talk about a couple of podcast administrative stuff. I'm excited about doing the podcast. I kind of wanted to do this, and but I feel like when I sit down and record myself, I feel like I have to explain why I want to do that. And to me, it just, there's a lot of, all the media that's available out there is usually national stuff, but it's really not very difficult to make local stuff and local media. Mm-hmm. And you hear a lot of politicians right now saying the answer to bad speech is not less speech, because there's some censorship out there. It's more speech, and I would say more good speech. Well, to me, the answer to bad national media and bad national government is not less national media and less national government necessarily. It's just good local media and good local government. And I like the podcast format because we can sit down for half an hour and get to know you, get down into the weeds on some of these subjects. And so I don't know why, what made me think of this, but you've got the computer up, and a podcast gets disseminated on the internet. So I'm going to make this as easy to disseminate as possible. I'll make an MP3 file. It'll be about 100 megabytes in that neighborhood, I think. I'll make that available for download. It doesn't have to be on Spotify or anything like that. I checked MP3 players for one that has, because if I'm listening to a podcast, I like the back 20 seconds button, back 15 seconds, back 30 seconds. But some of them don't make that available if you're just listening to an MP3. So for this, I recommend VLC Media Player. You can hold down the rewind button and it goes back 20 seconds.
So, and it's free.
And it's free, yeah. And I don't think it's going to change because it's open source. So VLC Media Player, good way to listen to this. And then along with the MP3, I've got links to, if you want to dig further into any of these subjects, I'll have a link to one of the websites. And another good thing about Delaware, there's a lot of great information, good websites out there with a lot of good information. For example, in preparing to do this, I wanted to know, so you're city councilman for Ward 4.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, what is Ward 4? Ward 4 is east side, and it includes the northwest neighborhood, and there's a map to that. So I've got that map here, which was easy to find under the Meet City Council webpage.
And those get redrawn every census, too, just to make sure we're all roughly representing a quarter of the city. So right now, that's about 10,000, more than 10,000.
How they were drawn, yeah. Because I kind of gave them names. Ward 4 is the east side plus the northwest neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Ward is kind of the new development on the west side of town, up to Williams Street.
So southwest?
North, kind of far northwest, I guess.
The Bueller's area.
Yeah.
I called that one the Bueller's Ward.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So down to Williams Street, up to the north border of Delaware.
Second would be kind of like the YMCA area plus the older part of...
So like South Liberty Road?
Yeah, and down to Sandusky Street, like where City Hall is kind of the corner of where that second ward is. Then third is the south side of town, which is all the way down to almost to Peach Bullet Road at this point. So
Stratford Road. Actually, I think I've lived in three of them, and we got our groceries in the fourth one. So Bueller's.
I think I've lived in two at this point, because I used to live down near Stratford Road and then moved over here. So yeah. So
when did you move here, Drew? Let's go into introductions.
Yeah, in like to Delaware itself or to current home?
Delaware itself.
Delaware itself. So I moved here for college. I came to college in 2006 to OWU. But then I was here full time. I think senior year I got an apartment. So that would have been, 2009? And been here ever since.
So. 09, all right. So you've been here 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Delaware's a great place.
Yeah, it's changed a lot in 14 years, but I think it's much more alive than it was even when I started here.
Yeah.
So for people who've been here longer, I'm sure the change is bigger. But
right. I grew up here. I got moved here in, I think, 93 when I was 10. No, we moved here when I was, I'm on a podcast, so I can't even remember my own life. We moved at 85, we moved to Delaware Drive. And then, so that was whatever the Southwest Ward. Anyway, Delaware Drive, lived there until I was 7. And then we moved to Stratford Road, and we lived there until I left for college. Did a bunch of things from college in 2002 until I moved back in 2021. Got married, moved back to Delaware, and we moved to William Street and lived there for 2 years, and then moved over to Woodland Avenue where we live now.
Yeah,
so that's in Ward 4. Yeah,
yeah. It's
I'm stuck on the wards now.
Yeah,
because I saw that map.
Yeah, and that's just for anyone listening. That's the way City Council's set up. We have 4 ward representatives, so I'm technically only representing the people within Ward 4. Although we'll help anybody. But then we have 3 at-large representatives, too. And that's where the mayor gets chosen from, those at-large groups, because they represent everyone in the city, because everyone votes for them, versus just a small section of the city.
Yeah.
So when you see the mayor, they've been voted by everybody, and then council selects mayor from those 3 at-large seats.
So in keeping with introductions, so Drew and I know each other from playing in the same band.
Mm-hmm.
And then after band practice, I said I'd like to do a podcast. Then I had my 40th birthday, and again, I was having a couple beers, and I called Drew. I said, Drew, we got to do this right now. When can we do it? Next weekend. So that was last weekend, so I just turned 40.
Oh, happy birthday.
And, yeah, thank you. And I said, less thinking, more doing. Let's just do the podcast. So here we are. And so that's how we know each other. And that's why we're sitting here in his dining room.
Yeah.
I saw somewhere. So I've been looking into podcasts and how you do them well. And an early thing to do is establish why. So that's why we're here. And other things I want to do. So there's 2 ways to do podcasts. One of them is to be an expert on the subject and prepare a lot. Like Dan Carlin does.
Yeah.
You've heard some
hardcore
Dan Carlin.
History.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Those are monumental tasks to do those podcasts. The other way to do it is to be curious enough to ask the questions. And I feel like I can do that. So I want to do that. So I've got questions for Drew, and we covered a lot of them already. But one, I'm going down the bullet points now. So the one of the early questions I asked you about the city councilman is I lived on William Street, and the light post right out front was it beeps 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the federal mandate to have, to be disability compliant.
Yes.
So that, in that case, I always say it wrong, but so that blind people can find their way across the street and know when it's okay to go.
Right.
In my case, it was right outside our window and it was beeping all night long at 2 a.m.
Right.
And so I asked you, is there any way to get that on a timer? Because I couldn't hear it over the traffic. The traffic didn't bother me so much. But then at 2 a.m. when you've got like a clock ticking outside your window.
Right, and there's no other noise.
And then the answer was, and I kind of knew this would be the answer, was we can't do that because it's a requirement. And the reason, and it's a requirement because we get federal funding for infrastructure, things like that. And to get the federal funding, you have to follow the rules. And then you can't get those rules changed because it's way bigger than Delaware, those rules are.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the rule is bad, but that beeping outside my window at 2 a.m., once the traffic finally went away, I couldn't. That was a nuisance.
Yeah.
But I asked you and you said that was the reason. And that's another reason why I say local is good, because that decision could be made at the local level, but not the national level. Anyway, do you think there's any way to how much does that affect national funding, how much does that affect decisions at the local level? How much money do we take for our infrastructure from federal funds like that?
It's hard to get an easy number out of it because a lot of it is, it comes from different places for one thing. So for example, if it's a, say we get a grant for business development from the government, that's going to come from a different department than necessarily like an infrastructure sort of thing. The other issue is a lot of times funding is distributed to the states, who then get to decide how they distribute it to the counties, who then get to decide how they distribute it to the cities. So there's
several
step after step
waterfall.
After step. Yeah. And sometimes additional things are added to that. Sometimes they're not. So it's hard to always know where the funding started from, I guess. Generally speaking, I think most of the funding we take in comes from the state, and I mean, federal government stuff funnels through that as well. So rarely, if ever, are rules taken away when you have that tier. So
I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have an easy answer for that, but especially given the financial situation the city's in right now, a lot of our public works projects generally have at least decent component of grant funding or federal or state money that's included in it. So like the Point Project is, I think the state is kicking in a good portion of the funding for that. And then grants are covering another part. So the city actual investment of local tax dollars is relatively small to the overall cost of the project, even though it's still the biggest
the point system.
So the, where Central and William come together on the east side.
Okay.
Yeah. So that project is the biggest public works project ever undertaken in Delaware.
Widening that bridge, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's separate from the, it's also on the east side, but it's further out than the, near the sandbar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
the train station.
Yeah. So this is out kind of where you transition from
where Dairy
old
Point
Delaware
is.
To, yeah.
Okay. So Dairy Point, the train bridge is only two lanes wide and there's a lot of traffic on both sides at rush hour.
Yeah.
Which we have kind of now in Delaware, a little bit of rush hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to widen that train bridge, which is a huge project because the train has to go over it.
Yeah. And it is the
partly anyway,
one of the worst lessons in all the intersections of government, because it's two state highways on a local, in a local municipality crossed by a railroad, which has more power than anybody on the planet. So it's just one of those things where there's federal rules, there's state rules, there's local rules, and everyone has to agree. And it's taken decades to get it agreed upon to even start the project, so now it's underway. But for
an outsider, besides the obvious weight of the train going over the bridge, you have a bureaucratic mess.
Yeah,
and
okay, because of how the railroads were set up in the 1830s and 40s, they were basically given monopolies over the land that they own, so they don't have to answer to anybody. Even if the federal government were to say like, "Hey, we need to do this," they can say no.
They were more powerful than the federal government at that time.
Yeah, and to a point where I think, I can't remember the name, but the history teacher, I mean, there was some railroad tycoon who actually
Vanderbilt?
Might, is either that or maybe Salmon Chase, I don't know who it was, but he bailed out the federal government with railroad money.
And in exchange, they gave him
whatever land. He wanted. So
tax-free land, probably.
Yeah. Okay. So so basically, we were asking the railroad, hey, can you rebuild your bridge once we widen the road? And they're like, no, you can do it. So we get to pay for that.
Oh, yeah. So that is, I guess that's an example of the opposite direction where you want the federal government to be more powerful than the company.
Yeah.
For the local. Well, trains aren't really local either.
No. Yeah. Especially since we don't have passenger
trains.
They're
a company, but they're not local.
No.
They're kind of by definition not local.
Yeah. Yeah, I think most of them are based out in like Nebraska, places like that now. But we have, generally, I think the structure that at least Ohio follows is the federal government will have funding attached to certain things, the state will have funding attached to certain things, and then local governments are kind of free to do what they want within their borders. That's in our state constitution, home rules, what they call it. But that's been somewhat adjusted in recent years, where the state has stepped in and said, no, we're not going to let you do that even if it's just going to affect your city, you can't do that kind of thing.
Larger government mandated something to local government?
Yeah. I know. But, yeah. So, and the federal government will do that, too. They'll, like, I was looking up, because with the beeping thing in the ADA, I was trying to find other examples of where things were kind of attached to national funding. And one of those was requiring, like, helmets when you ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
The national government back in the 70s, so that would have been, what, Ford, I think, said basically, we're not going to give you highway money unless you mandate that motorcyclists wear helmets. So they basically, they'd hold that funding hostage to get certain outcomes.
These are bad examples for my case.
Yeah.
Wearing helmets is a good thing. And the beeping is for a good cause. I can see the cause.
But you can, a lot of times when you have, it's like you're wearing mittens. You can pick up the thing, but are you going to do it in the most nuanced, best way possible?
No, you're going to fat finger it down there. Yeah.
So, I think that's an example of where that happens, where, yes, the beeping is necessary. It's good to have access for blind people so they can cross the street safely, but how do we do it in a way that doesn't adversely affect other people too?
And well, besides the poor example that I picked, the why for the podcast. Okay, I was injecting my opinion in that question. I'll be transparent about what I was doing. I was injecting my opinion in that question. My opinion is we should identify more locally and make decisions more locally. And we should wear helmets on our motorcycles, though, too. So.
Yeah. But I think, like, when I ran for council, I tried to run in their nonpartisan positions. So I tried to run as nonpartisan as I could because, I mean, my argument was the pothole in your road doesn't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, independent, whatever. It's when you get local enough, it's just people. And I think that's a good thing because you don't get that, I'll watch this news channel and they told me to be angry about this, so I'm going to come to my local government and scream about it kind of thing. This is an issue I have in my town. You're a person who lives down the street from me. Let's talk about it and figure out how we can fix it. And I think that's the democracy that America is known for. And I think it's to be a little too patriotic or whatever, but just, I think that's the real America, the way that things should be.
I 100% agree. And that is why I wanted to have you, a city councilman, on the podcast, interview you as the first episode of this podcast, because I think it helps people get involved. And my questions are, another question I have on here is, how can people be more involved? What are the best ways for people to get involved with city council? I went to a Columbus city council meeting, maybe a couple of them, cause I was curious, when I first became a real estate agent, because it kind of intertwined with real estate a little bit, when they, like abandoned properties, stuff like that. How can people get involved?
I think there's different ways. A lot of it depends on how much time you have. The easy way is
if I want to influence, let me make it more specific, maybe easier to answer. If I want to influence whether or not there's a park in an upcoming development, is there a way to do that?
Yeah. And I think, so north of town, we have massive development coming in, the Addison development. And
Addison development?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be...
I'll look that up, make a link to it. Yeah. So if we want to look into it more.
A lot of it's still in the initial actual build-out phases, but the plans have been going for about 2 years. And that's one area where we saw... like the residents who live around what will be that development had a lot of concerns because previously it was agricultural fields and some wooded areas, things like that. And
farms are becoming developments.
Right. And it's a big change.
The usual thing, yeah. This is the one where they're going to connect somewhere near Smith Park all the way over to 23, right?
Yeah, eventually. Okay. And I mean, that's going to be a multi-year process, but yeah, eventually that'll be the case.
You're saying it will.
The roadway is going in.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
And they've already started kind of doing all the topographical work to make that happen. But what the land uses for different areas are going to be haven't entirely been decided for the whole development, just sections of it. But the residents who were concerned about it, they came and they said, we think there needs to be more parkland. We don't want to see this kind of thing built here, this kind of thing built here, that kind of thing. And
so it was the residents getting involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So, and a lot of that is paying attention to what's coming up on those committees and commissions. And they,
So it's the future residents. How can this be connected? I mean, maybe this is impossible, but it's the future residents of the developments. They're going to care about the parks, really. Is there a way to connect those people with the development somehow? I mean, besides just people generally being involved in planning, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Because I've read, you know,
not
they skim over these development plans in the city council meeting because they're so involved. And we just talked about there are entire councils of volunteers who do a lot of work to put those plans together, plus professionals, I'm sure, drawing those up because they're professionally drawn.
It'd be
tough.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just identifying one of the problems of local government and development is the developers are the one with the plan. They just mostly want to make money. They want to sell their product, which means they have to have a good product. But
right. Yeah. And I guess it's on them to do the market research I know there's a couple sections of that development that are entirely essentially apartments for one story apartments for older people who are empty nesters, that kind of thing. They feel there's a market for that. And generally, I think that's probably true.
Probably true. Yeah.
A lot of people aging out of their current homes.
Those who don't move to Florida.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ones who don't go to the villages are going
right.
to stay here. But the intersection between the whole, so developer buys a piece of old farmland. They have rights inherent to what they can do with it because they're the property owner. Same as if I wanted to, put a different doors on my garage or something like that. They can do things with their property without government involvement. But so there's that balance between what can we force someone to do legislatively and what is crossing that legal line to we're dictating how you build your thing to the point where it's not going to be either affordable for you to do it as a developer, or you're going to have to price your product so high that we're going to create a huge housing situation where we only have $800,000 houses available. So
the developer is very good at making the case that, oh no, this isn't viable if you make it cost this much.
Right. Yeah.
That's their goal.
It's always a financial hardship if you're a developer,
but they end up making money.
Amazingly. Somehow they always come through with that. But, yes. I think that's at least recently one of the bigger examples of that tension, that amount of community involvement, I think it's been good because what was proposed is different than what is currently in the plan. And a lot of the positive parts of the development are going to be as a result of people who live in the area saying, we would rather see this.
Right.
There's definitely some areas that people aren't happy about still, which, I mean, it's a massive development. It's going to happen. But, so.
Maybe I would ask the question then, and this is a question for the air. I don't know if there's an answer. How Delaware got planned somehow so that I live near Mingo, Blue Limestone, and then, oh, by the way, I live near Boardman Arts Park, and all of those are nice. And that's a lot of parks. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Now, the city does that. And also, that's my plug for local government. In general, I don't like government, but that's because they usually end up focusing on the national government because there's a lot of media about national government, really. I mean, that's our mindset now is what's on media, which is usually national because they're putting out all the media except for local podcasts like this talking about local stuff. But local government does a great job with things like parks, and so I do like local government.
And I think that's where...
And they did a good job with the city of Delaware, and I think most people agree with that.
Yeah. Well, I think
people move here, they love it.
Yeah. And if you can see what you're getting for your tax money, I think it's generally an easy sell. But when you have trouble seeing that, where the bigger you get, state and national government, it's harder to see, oh, that money went to what? I don't know what I bought with that.
Right.
But
another question. You mentioned the Addison Project, but before that, I was on the local versus national thing again. That'll be a theme for me. The waterfall of money, you know, the tiers of the waterfall. I would like to see it, another way I would put it, I would like to see it more reversed, where instead of the bulk of our tax is going to DC and then, state and local taxes kind of look like a tip on top of that. They're a tiny fraction of it. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if that were reversed.
Yep.
And then we made a decision as a locality, whether or not we'll send the money to DC, or the state to, do that because to you know, national defense, the things that we all agree on, like national defense, and then administer the money more locally. The decisions get made much better locally, in my opinion, rather than, like you said, with the MIT. How much – so I didn't even know – we know political parties, but I literally didn't – I couldn't have said which political party you were. And I think you're a Democrat, right?
Generally, I have voted that way, but that
– No, I don't mean as a city councilman.
Oh.
Are city councilmen identified as Republican and Democrat?
No, we run as nonpartisan, so
– Okay. All right. So that – okay. I just learned that now that –
Yeah, and that's honestly, I couldn't tell you. I mean, I know some of the other members of council's parties, but I couldn't tell you all of them.
So, okay.
Which I kind of like that because a lot of times, I mean, I can't think of any truly local question that we've discussed that is
affected by that.
Yeah. I mean, there's, even when you look in the parties, like Republican Party, there's a spectrum of people. The Democratic Party, there's a spectrum of people from left to right. Where you have fiscal conservative Democrats, fiscal conservative Republicans, whatever it might be.
We've been made to disagree by the national media, but right. Locally we don't disagree so much.
Right.
And yeah, we agree.
Yeah. And there's, like, right now, I think the biggest issue that's probably going to come out of council in the next 8 months is going to be I think we've agreed that there's a need for an income tax levy, but what that looks like, how much it is, all those things still need to be figured out. And there's not really a party line to take on any of that. It's just, is this money needed? Where does it get put to the best use? How do we structure that in a way that's going to be most effective? And that's just management. It's not necessarily a political question.
Right. My point in asking the question actually was kind of to point out that it doesn't matter because I didn't even know. And the only reason I thought you were Democrat actually is because the sign's blue and the sign out front of my neighbor's house is red. So I thought, oh, maybe that's Democrat and Republican. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually had not made that connection, but yeah, maybe.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. But like you said, it doesn't come into play, and even less so than I thought, because I thought at least there was some kind of party affiliation, but apparently not.
I won't say that it's like, I think both the local Democrats, local Republicans will definitely make the case for their preferred candidates. And if you wanted to find out, you could, but I don't think it's better if you don't know in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean to ask you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just thought you were affiliated.
No, it doesn't bother me at all. So,
well, thank you for your service as a city councilman.
Sure.
You're clearly not, a national politician.
No.
I'm not sure I would thank them usually. they're getting paid somehow.
I'd be a pretty terrible politician, I think. But
well, this is challenging, the podcast thing.
Yeah.
I gotta direct the conversation without feeling like I'm being a jerk to you and interrupting you and all that.
Yeah,
I'm doing a good job.
Yeah, no, you're doing great, and I'm not the best at remaining on track, so I appreciate that.
All right, good. All right.
The guidelines.
So also with this, the reason I wrote it down on here, I want to be transparent about how the podcast is made because I feel like we have to be able to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need some breathing room to say, okay, we've gone for 58 minutes and, you know, almost an hour. And, you know, one of the texts you sent me was, I can be an upstanding citizen for an hour. It's not so easy to record this and know you're being recorded and go on an hour conversation. So here's some breathing room, you know, talk about what we're doing here. We have a Zoom R16. How's the sound? And we need feedback from the audience, too. Now that I'm thinking about that, I think the audio is pretty good.
Yeah.
We're listening to it. And I know, you know, in looking at podcasts and listening to podcasts, it's very difficult to be a good podcast. It's very easy to do something that can just completely blow your podcast. I've listened to a few. There was a parenting podcast. And my wife wanted me to listen to it. So I like podcasts and I thought that would be interesting, but they trailed off at the end of every sentence and their audio did. I think they were moving away from the mic or something. I could hear about 70% of what they were saying. So I wanted to do the headsets cause it keeps the microphone at the same distance from our mouth.
Yeah.
So when I normalize the volume, at least it'll all be the same, I think.
Yeah. It's at least listening as we've talked, I think it's been very consistent.
Yeah.
I like,
so. Feedback on the audio, let us know. Feedback on, you know, Should I not have cut off Drew a couple times? You know, that kind of stuff.
Or do what I just need Drew to shut up at better? Some point?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Now that I'm not running again, you can unleash all the things I did wrong.
That's so we've talked about city council. We've established that Drew is good with being a host also. And I have established for myself after doing this for an hour as an interviewer, I would very much like to have some help doing this. Okay. I'd like to do it once a month. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Your city council duties are over in November,
mm-hmm.
so that'll free up some time.
Yeah.
It does take a little bit of time.
I'm surprised we've talked for an hour. It does not feel like it's been that long. So
I agree.
It's just been very
yeah.
easy conversation. So
I feel successful in that. We've done an hour of podcasting. Good. So I've got bullet points. We're done with the city council stuff unless it comes up. Some other things I would like to have on the podcast. And so this, I set up a website, DelawareOhioPodcast.com. And by that, I mean, I bought the domain. I've always had a blog and I've always believed in producing. That's another reason I'm here. Nathan Ruffing, that's why I'm here, is I believe in producing media. Any media that we consume, we should also be producing. I feel like it's healthy. It gives me an outlet. Gives me a chance to talk about politics that's not Republican or Democrat, not divisive, that it's made that way on social media and national media, et cetera, et cetera. Gives me that outlet. The blog has always been good that way, and so I like to produce media. That's why I'm doing it. I lose my train of thought. But other things I would like to put on here are just basic stuff. And I put the weather on here as a joke, so it's 99% chance to be cooler in October here in Delaware than it was in September. I don't think we can do the weather once a month. I'd like to do one a month. And let's see. Oh, I recommend Mary Sky for weather. It's a replacement to Dark Sky. I'm also into, I'd like to put out some informational sources for people, because when everything went national, I'm an electrical engineer and I'm in IEEE, Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and I'm a member of the Technology and Society Club, not the club. It's a Technology and Society portion of IEEE. And they talk about how technology can and should be used. And my opinion always is we should be getting out basic equipment like this and producing our own local media, because I think it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good to me. I think it'd be nice for people to listen to, you know, pointing outside, because there's people all around us that could listen to this. I'd like to put out some good content and relevant information. And one of the things that went away is the Delaware Gazette. It didn't go away. I know it's still there, but I don't think they have any actual reporters.
I think they have...
And I don't mean to, you know, diss the Delaware Gazette if they do. And
I may
know,
undersell
few
them,
people that are left.
Yeah, I think they have two or three that are left locally, but they're, I mean, to be two or three people and try to
they've
get
transitioned to AI. You know, I mean, it's not what it used to be. They don't, so functions that the Delaware Gazette used to have were reporting on sports, which would be nice to have. I'd like to get some sources. I need help here, you know. We need help here to get the good, relevant information out there consistently each month. And I've got a list of information I'd like to have. Weather is a joke, but first Friday is October 6th. That's another kind of joke one. That's pretty easy, which is the first Friday of the month. But I talked to some people, and when I told people about the podcast also, I mentioned it at work, and my boss said, I didn't know Delaware had a podcast. I said, well, it doesn't, but now it can't, or now it does. Some people didn't know about First Friday at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to say, hey, First Friday of every month. Drew, describe First Friday.
So it's basically a giant street festival every once a month. They have a theme. It's all run by Main Street Delaware, which is a nonprofit that kind of represents the businesses in the downtown trying to revitalize the area. But like last month was back to school. So they had, the schools all had different things. Obu's marching band played. They had bounce houses for kids to play, balloon animal creation, like you name it. Every month is going to be a little different, but the themes are always cool. They have a first responders month where you can come and crawl through the police cars and fire trucks and all those things. So it's just, it's the community event for the area once a month. So
you can walk around the street with a beer, but is it good for the kids?
It's good for everybody.
It's definitely it's good for the kids. I mean, yeah. The kids run around. They love it. There's bouncy houses. I didn't realize at first that there was a theme every month because it's similar every month.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say, it's kind of difficult to get food during that time.
Yeah.
So don't go there hungry.
Yeah. If you're looking to go get into a restaurant, either show up before 6 or be prepared to wait.
But the line at Barley Hopsters is about 5 or 10 minutes, so that's no problem. But trying to get food is difficult. Yeah. I think Jimmy John's, you can probably get it at Jimmy John's.
Yeah. They're that's supposed not local, to be freaking though. Fast, though. So.
They are. Yeah. You can. Yeah. If you're in a pinch on First Friday, you can.
Yeah.
New stuff coming up. Little Brown Jug. Another at in the meeting at work, some people didn't know about the Little Brown Jug. Everybody's got the flags out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe the Little Brown Jug?
Yeah,
you're better at it than I am. I'm putting it on you, Drew.
It is. Yes, I have to represent Delaware.
There you go.
It's the one of the three jewels in the Triple Crown of harness racing for international horse racing. So,
name the other two.
God, I wish I could.
See, I've learned what I can put you on the spot with.
Yeah,
I didn't know there were other. Are there two others?
There are at least two others, but I don't know.
I've heard it's the Kentucky Derby of harness racing, which to me meant it was number one. I did not realize that there was a Preakness and a Belmont Stakes as well.
Yeah, they have. There's two others.
Maybe
I know.
That's us claiming to be the number one out of the three. Also,
yeah, I'll stick by that. But
I saw, harness racing comes to town, and when you see horses, you think, oh, it's fun to watch a horse, but. That's a lot of work.
It is.
That's somebody's life doing that.
Yeah.
And so I now have written down also, I'd like to interview somebody that does that.
Yeah. Well, and it's just the number of people who come from around the world to see this thing has just always shocked me because I didn't, before I moved to Delaware, I had no idea it existed.
That's why we have an airport.
Yeah.
The rich horse owners can come in and go to the Little Brown.
If you go right now,
I think there are, yeah.
There are some pretty big private jets there right now.
Got to have horses on them.
Yeah. But, it's a pretty incredible event. So it's tens of thousands of people. And
I saw a semi-truck sized horse trailer actually on the street on the way here, actually, or maybe it was last night. But it got me thinking about, all the it would be interesting to interview a horse owner. So,
in the little
Brown Jug.
Yeah. And there's
get some backstory on.
There's quite a few horses locally. And then, the international people. I think the Budweiser horses are in town right now. They're all boarded up
for the All Horse Parade
at the fairgrounds, so you can go visit them, which is always cool. But it's probably the busiest time of year for Delaware, really, as far as big events go.
Certainly, the Delaware County Fair too.
Yeah,
Delaware County Fair, 16th to the 23rd of September. All Horse Parade is today. Mm-hmm. By the time you listen to this, you either knew about that or you didn't. Okay, podcast regular questions. I like to do these questions for every guest on the podcast. What is the most underrated restaurant in Delaware, Drew?
So I put a lot of thought into this yesterday, and I still don't have a good answer.
I'll take this one. I have an answer.
Go for it.
Asahi. Do you know Asahi?
I do. It is delicious. But it's kind of tucked back in a shopping center, and I don't think a lot of people know about it.
No, you can't walk there from downtown, but it has plenty of parking.
Mm-hmm.
It's hibachi in Delaware.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, you know, if you're spending $50 on a plate on hibachi, then, I wouldn't maybe call it underrated, but it's hibachi in Delaware. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
You got the big flame. We took the boy there, and he said fire, when he saw the big flame. That was fun. And then I think also people don't know they have lunch, reasonably priced lunch, $12, 15. Let's say you get out there for 15 if you get a water. And
which isn't half bad.
It's great, yeah. Easy parking, great lunch. That's my underrated.
So I think I'd say Corner Cafe over on the east side is also pretty underrated.
Where's that? I don't know.
It's if you go through the point, it's like on the left, right after you get out towards Meyer.
Aldi.
Yeah. A little bit closer to town than that, but it's
between by Dairy Queen. I guess Dairy Queen's still out there, Marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right in that area. So they've got, I think they do Greek food. They've got a good breakfast. So it's there. It's busy, but no one ever talks about it. So
that's a good one.
Yeah,
I haven't been out there. Corner Cafe on the east side, Asahi on the south side.
Yeah.
All right.
And then anything downtown is going to be good, but I think
they've been We know about those. That's why I said underrated. Yeah. All right. Get people driving out to the outskirts. Okay, this might be more difficult. Most underrated single menu item. I have an answer for that also, but it's at Asahi.
I'll let you go first.
We have a dog barking. This is authentic.
Yes.
It's an authentic podcast. The egg yolk sauce at Asahi. Definitely get it. I think that's a staple at Hibachi, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's definitely good at Asahi, though.
Okay, I'll try
It's an extra it's a $2 adder.
Yeah, those are always worth it, though, seems like. I'm going to go with the, only because I don't think people get this versus other things, but the chicken Copanisti at Opa. It's popular, probably, but I think it is, and I'm a picky eater, so people can fight me on this, but I think it is their best menu item.
Chicken
Copanisti.
So Chicken Copanisti. And Opa is just south of William Street on Sandusky, right?
Yep.
So that's downtown.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, but they have it's a gyro, but they've got, it's chicken. There's like a spicy feta sauce in there and some other cheese-based sauce. It's probably not great for you, but it's delicious. So.
Yeah. Opa's full a lot.
Yeah.
It's small.
Yeah. Although they are, they're expanding. So the building door to them, they're going to take over.
Oh, they're going to take some of that?
All two floors, so it'll be whiskey bar on the top, restaurant on the bottom, apartments on the third floor, I think.
Whiskey bar on top?
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
Delaware's good. Yeah. Good. So. They got the zoning approved for that. They got their liquor license.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So it should be good.
I support that.
I think as of now, they're the biggest whiskey bar in Ohio, at least from marketing.
Who, Opa is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they have more selection than anybody else.
Nice. All right. Wow. Good ones. Chicken Copanisti at Opa, and they're going to have more space for us to buy that.
Yeah.
Now they're going to take it off their menu.
Yeah, that's true.
No. I hope not.
Yeah. I think it's a big seller.
Because we talked about it. Yeah, everybody's going to go there and not going to be there. Or it will be. Yeah. We'll tell them.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Best pizza in Delaware. Delaware has a lot of pizza.
It does.
I asked a few people this question. And I got answers I didn't even recognize.
It's a loaded question, too. I feel like if you say certain things, it's contentious. People are like, I know where you live.
Yeah, that's right. I know.
I think if I had to pick just pizza in general, I think I would pick Payne's, partially because they're right around the corner. And I know people will fight me for that. But I think best pizza is going to be Mohayo downtown.
Okay. I've been there once, but it was a long time ago, and I've gotten that answer a few times over the last week when I asked people. Because I was just curious when I came up with the question.
It's good.
Payne's I haven't even heard of.
It's right under the bridge.
And I can walk
this way, yeah.
Okay.
So and they have a buffet. I mean, it's like mom and pop pizza kind of place where you can get subs, you can get pizza. They have baked pastas. It's good.
Should have gone there last night.
Yeah, they deliver.
I didn't know. All right. Well, we're going to Payne's. Good. All right. Best local beer. And you may not even know because I went to Barley Hopsters last night, and I forgot the beer, but it's morning anyway. It's probably good that I forgot the beer. I went to Barley Hopsters last night, and I said, hey, do you have any local beer? Because we want to drink some local beer tomorrow. We're not going to defile the podcast with import to Delaware beer.
No.
And he said, at first he said no, because he said restoration. He said, no, nobody cans it. Restoration will can like one can if you're there, apparently, if you tell them that. But he said no, but then he said, oh, well, we have Delaware County beer. I said, well, that's fine. That Delaware County's close enough. And I meant to have the cans right in front of me, but it's Olentangy River Brewing, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Apparently it's down in Lewis Center, mm-hmm. And I've got a few of those in my fridge now. I meant to bring them over, but.
Yeah, they've got good stuff.
I haven't even tried it.
In town, I like Stas a lot. Partially for the atmosphere, it's just a great place to go. But they'll do growlers too. I don't think you can go wrong, really, but Stas is my favorite.
Right. So. Yeah, drinking a little beer feels good, yeah. Okay. Now this is productive right here, and we're getting toward the end. Proposed future guests. I'm going to go down the list, the things I've thought of over the last week or so. Number one, the form on the website. I'm going to give a plug for that. Please recommend guests, specific people. I'm going to say ideas, but specific people, please. It's very easy to do once you have the the link, DelawareOhioPodcast.com. We'll redirect you actually to my blog because I don't want to manage another website just to do this when it doesn't take much. It's very easy to. I don't want the administrative portion of this to take this over. So it's very easy. Go to the form and select, I think blank should be an interviewed guest on the podcast because, and then that sends me an email. Very easy for me to get and very easy to submit. Here's a list. A restaurant expert, which anyone is if they go to a lot of restaurants, but anyone, I don't know who that would be, but I'd like to have a restaurant expert talk about these restaurants in detail. Chamber of Commerce information. There's a Delaware Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what a Chamber of Commerce is, and I would like to go ahead a little bit, but does it sound like a good podcast guest?
Yeah.
Who would that be?
I can't remember who the current Chamber of Commerce president is. So they're based out on kind of near where Bueller's used to be, behind like McDonald's and all that. But they...
Chambers of Commerce are private entities, correct? They're not government, correct? They influence government policy, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but they...
I honestly don't know.
See, we need to have... That's why we need...
Because I think... Because it's countywide, the Chamber of Commerce, and then we have...
Oh, Delaware County Chamber of Commerce. That sounds right, yeah.
But and I feel like they do get some county funding, but I don't know. I don't know if they're separate or integrated into the county government structure or not. But also on that, I'd say Main Street Delaware would be a good one. Maybe it could be a two-guest sort of thing where, because Main Street represents really the downtown businesses. And so we could kind of get the countywide perspective, the greater city perspective, and then the downtown perspective.
So Main Street Delaware you might describe as a city chamber of commerce somewhat?
Somewhat, yeah.
But it's city-funded, right?
No.
Or no, you said it's a nonprofit.
Yeah, they're a nonprofit. Okay. They do get, like, we give them a little bit of money every year.
Who decided to start that?
That was, so it comes from
I assumed it was
lot.
A city. I mean, I assumed it was a city.
No, okay. It was a local business owner. So a couple of landlords in the downtown and then some business owners formed it when, kind of when downtown started dying out a little bit about 15, 20 years ago. When Walmart came to town, so a lot of the big box store drained downtown retail. And because of that,
so it was a response to, in a way, a response to Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, there's a national movement that's, I think, somewhat affiliated with the National Council for Historic Preservation. So they kind of came up with like their four tenets of what it takes to revitalize a downtown. So
who is this?
National Council for Historic Preservation. I may be misquoting what their
I'll
name is.
I'll write it down. I'll put a link. Yeah.
But they have four kind of areas that this is one of my earlier jobs out of college was doing this for Powell. So that's why I know more about it than I should. But it was economic restructuring. So how do you take what was a retail core for a city and restructure that into something that fits the current economic landscape? Historic preservation and then there were two others. Design. So how do you make spaces that people want to come to? So like planters downtown, that kind of thing. And then, and I think they've changed.
It's hard to remember lists on the spot.
I think promotions was the last one. So how do you market your downtown as a place people want to come? So that's where concepts like First Friday came out of that.
Okay.
Where, okay, we're going to have a big party downtown. We're going to make the downtown look nice. They do all those sorts of things to kind of draw people in to support the businesses.
Would they be involved in the Riverfront Project?
Yes, they were one of the groups that helped finance the study that was done to kind of come up with that. Plan is a strong word, but vision.
Right. So. Yeah. Vision. It starts with a vision that justifies the plan.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So they're a good group that have, and it's evolved a lot since even the time that I've lived here. Because when I lived downtown, like we would decorate the town Christmas tree and three people would show up to the lighting. I think 12 was the first time we did it. And now there's, God, I don't even know, 30,000 people. It's huge.
We were there. It's a good thing I'm tall because it's the only way I could see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were across the street.
Yeah, so were we. And so it's the things that they've done to really build up the downtown businesses are just incredible.
Right. All right.
Sorry.
Chamber of Commerce. No, that's a good one. Chamber of Commerce / Main Street Delaware. Do they know each other?
I think so.
So we could have them on the podcast together. They don't compete, really, I don't think.
They're, no, they're more – they do different things, but I think they're all working for the same same goals.
Yeah, they might be interested to meet each other. Mm-hmm. Okay. The parking app, that'd be an interesting one to talk about.
Yeah.
So Dave Johnson, I'm sure he doesn't mind me talking about it. I mentioned it earlier, and he has talked to a lot of people within the city about doing it. It would be a private effort, but the idea is something I do think people could get on board with, which is making it easier to park. And in doing it, I've been involved with it, helped him out, and done some parking mapping and talked to people. And it seems like, I would say the two things I've learned are, number one, Delaware's parking problem is primarily during the day. If it has a problem, it's during the day, because that's when the parking is restricted. Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of the, not that we have a huge office presence downtown, but like
people come downtown for lunch,
right?
Or they want to,
right? And we have banks and things where you have employees that are parking for the day, so that parking spot isn't, it's not right. I'm at lunch or at dinner for 2 hours. It's I'm there for an 8 hour stretch kind of thing. So.
Right. That plus all those people going to lunch, plus all the people that want to go to lunch with them. I think, yeah. So that's the daytime portion of it. And then nighttime, I would say the other part of it is actually not a, so much a problem. The other part is, I don't think people realize how much they can, where all the places that the options that they have.
Yeah.
People don't realize how many options they have at night, because all that parking that is restricted during the day, it doesn't say, I'm not restricted right now.
Right.
So I think people are hesitant to park there. Good examples are the library.
Mm-hmm.
When the library is not open, that's open.
Yeah. Behind PNC Bank, there's a space there where their parking lot is free game after, I think, 6. So next to the Strand, like in that little area.
I think they don't want people parking there.
Oh, well, never mind. I didn't
they don't.
That.
I talked to the parking lady.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a parking expert now. Don't park there.
Never mind.
But the other ones are. Sorry. I'm sure of that, because the parking lady said, I think people think that. And apparently said PNC doesn't. They want that lot empty.
Oh.
So.
Wow. That is my go-to place that I can't use anymore. Dang.
I just put it there. Sorry about that.
No, but, you're good.
Other ones are Spring Street.
Mm-hmm.
The there's a lot that says permit parking only, and that gives the hours, I think.
Yeah,
but I know I don't even think it says that. I think it just says permit parking only.
Yeah.
It's on the south side of Spring Street by where Napa used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
the permit parking sign was an experiment to see if we could get long-term, like, daytime parkers to buy a permit to park slightly outside of the prime parking areas and walk to work, and it didn't work. So that's gone now. It's just unrestricted parking.
But at night, at nighttime, I know, and weekends,
mm-hmm.
it's wide open.
Yes.
So that's option.
Yes. So now that's
library, and not just the front, behind, and also behind the library. And then there's that public lot on Franklin,
yep.
also by Maloney Novotny
mm-hmm.
County. So if you look for Maloney Novotny County, there's a public lot there that is free after hours. And that one's clearly posted.
Yes.
And then on the south side of Spring Street.
Yeah, and then what else? The county, not their parking garage, but the county lots behind the courthouse are open. And then if you go to the east side too, there's tons of street parking, because I feel like 23 is like an artificial barrier that people
don't think about. You go down and up into the river, and for whatever reason, that's
but
it's not as far as you think.
No,
it's 2 blocks.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the equivalent of what parking up near UDF and walking downtown. So it's not far, but people forget about it.
Right. So, but back to the parking app, it would be nice if all this information were consolidated, because the private lots are separate from the public parking, and then various signs, et cetera. It'd be nice if it were consolidated. We talked about the riverfront project, and actually you knew quite a bit about it. But that was on my list as proposed future guests. Immigrant restaurant owners. I think they have some of the most interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have quite a few that have come from, I think Opa's owners from, I don't want to get it wrong, but yeah, we have, Chow, we have people, Croatia, Italy, like all over. So,
they're from Croatia and Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Didn't know that. They have, yeah, interesting stories sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think of Delaware as, you know, you'd have to go outside Delaware to get culture, but really we have a lot of, you know, worldwide people here, I would imagine, more than we realize. School board or an expert in the schools, and I'm not sure that's one I'd want to tackle right away because that could be probably one that's kind of politically – people are talking about their kids with the school board. And the national stuff that's going on, I think that's I'd like to tackle that eventually, though. I don't want to shy away from issues because it's a big one. Mm-hmm. People care about the schools. Anybody familiar? So when I listen to a podcast and I see a guest who I know who they are, I'm much more likely to listen to it than somebody who might be interesting, but I don't know who they are. So I guess name recognition.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. Music scene. There's a lot of, you know, live music in Delaware.
Yeah, there is. And
I know the owner of the Delaware Music Academy, he has made some attempts to consolidate these, you know, like a one place where you can go and know what upcoming live music there is. If it's out there, I don't know where it is. So
yeah,
I'd like
either.
To find out about that. So those are a bunch of questions that we could answer on the podcast eventually.
Yeah.
By just having a conversation, which is harder than it looks, anybody who's listening.
Yeah, you put a lot of work into where we could go and all of that ahead of time. So you made it easy. But.
Good. I hope so. I'm glad you said it. Thank you for your service as a city councilman. Thank you for doing this. And look forward. And now we have two hosts. So.
Yeah, we'll see where this goes in the future.
And all right.
I'm looking forward to who else we can find. That's
one. I don't think I said a history expert. Did I not have that on here?
No, we've got a couple good history local history Delaware. People. So. Yeah, that would definitely
My wife
be.
Said that, too. She would like to know some about the history of Delaware. Ohio Wesleyan, Branch Rickey is an interesting figure. Mm-hmm. Frederick Douglass spoke here. Vincent Minnelli is from here. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, he grew up on, was it Washington or Franklin? I can't remember.
Yeah,
which,
people know that, but I looked it up, and, I mean, his Wikipedia page is about the most I could get from that. It says he's from Delaware, and if you look up his family members, it kind of shows why they came here and that kind of thing, but
yeah, one of the professors at OU, I think, was the guy that discovered the hole in the ozone layer from CFC. So, like, there's just, I feel like Delaware is one of those places where everyone says, "Oh, where's that?" And then you tell them, but when you look at who lives here, everyone's got a story, and it's
didn't know about the scientist.
Yeah, we've got, I don't know, over there, international best-selling authors who's got a movie being made about her work. So, I mean, there's just
probably
so many
two
people.
Podcasts.
Yeah.
Who's Who from Delaware.
Yeah.
And History of Delaware. Maybe both together.
Yeah. But yeah, there's people from the past, people from now. It's a lively place.
All right. Are we ready to hit the stop button?
Sure.
I'm done, I think. I don't have anything else.
No, I thought it would be hard to fill an hour, but here we are at almost an hour and a half. So
there's a blank page. That's why we didn't talk. We didn't talk prior to this.
Yes.
And we can't prepare it. You
no.
can't prepare an hour and a half.
No.
You can only do an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So.
And it just flowed.
So. Good. Good. Thanks for the conversation,
yeah.
Drew.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
And continuing, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. There's stop button.